The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kurt Benroot from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sci-Fi. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Daily Sci-Fi.
Hi, I'm Christine Everhart, and I'm reading In the Depths of the Museum by R. Rosakis. And no one had ever even seen a live giant squid until 2005, the precocious little mite recited. But they found squid parts in whale bellies and sucker marks on their faces. Don kept a pleasant smile fixed on his face. Docents weren't supposed to strangle visitors. The teacher was glancing at her watch again. The rest of the class milled around, aimlessly poking at cases. "But that's not the weirdest thing down there," the boy continued, almost bouncing in excitement. "There's this other fish that's almost all teeth, only there's this itty-bitty light hanging off the top. But it's so dark at the bottom of the ocean that little fishes just swim up to it. They don't even see all the teeth until chomp! There goes the little fish." "Yes, and if there's time, you can go back to the Hall of Ocean Life," Don said. "But right now, we're looking at the Incan artifacts. Kids, can you find the royal llama? First team to tell me what color it's wearing gets a point." The kids scattered excitedly through the hall, but the ocean kid stuck stubbornly to Don's side. Don just wanted 30 seconds of silence. Was that too much to ask? Maybe he was too old for this after all. The volunteer coordinator had muttered something about flaky seniors and their tendency to quit abruptly. Don had thought he still had more stamina than this. Time to pull out the big guns. "Did you know there's a case of shrunken heads?" He watched Ocean Kid's eyes go wide. "In the back." They weren't really supposed to point it out. It was one of those things that the museum couldn't quite make up its mind whether to be embarrassed by. Like the tiny cigarette in the miniature farmer's mouth in the diorama downstairs. Remnants of another time. But it was enough to halt the endless recitation of ocean facts. Don strategically wandered a little deeper in the exhibit. Shrunken heads notwithstanding, there wasn't much back here to attract the tourist crowd. With the kids scattered all over the gallery, it was strangely quiet. It would be soothing if it wasn't so creepy. There were some really weird things back here. He heard something. A voice, high-pitched, not discernible words, crying. He picked up his pace, around the corner. There was a little girl standing at the edge of the shadows, hands covering her face, sobbing as if her heart had been broken. She seemed young for his class, maybe some tourist's kid. "Hey there, sweetheart, it's okay," he said as he approached slowly. "We'll find your folks." She didn't look up. There was something strange about her, he realized as he got closer. Her edges kind of blurred into each other, like her hands weren't distinct from her face. There was something wrong about the crying, too. He couldn't put his finger on it. It just wasn't quite right. And she kind of glowed. He never even saw the teeth.
This is Christopher Bynum, and I'm reading How I Saved the Galaxy on a Limited Budget by Aidan Doyle. This all happened so many years ago that I can finally tell someone the true story of how I stopped an alien invasion. For reasons I won't go into, I was assigned to an outpost in a part of the galaxy frequented only by mining robots. Sometimes you're just in the wrong place at the right time. Well, all right, if you must know, I didn't make a lot of friends in my previous posting. All I'll say is that if you're ever assigned to a battleship called Invincible 3, asking what happened to the first two Invincibles probably won't endear you to your commanding officer. And so I found myself on a dead planet with only an AI for company. As far as AIs go, Shin wasn't too bad. It didn't like being stuck in a base with such limited bandwidth either. Most AIs have a real thing about wanting to install the latest security upgrades, and our station didn't have the budget for all the upgrades, so Shin resorted to unofficial patches. One morning, Shin woke me earlier than scheduled. An alien attack fleet is heading toward us, Hideyoshi. They've ignored my warnings. I was still half asleep.
Shouldn't there be sirens going off?
It's just you and me here, Hideyoshi.
I didn't need to be reminded.
I've informed you of the urgency of the situation, Shin said. A siren is not required.
I wasn't going to argue the point.
I scrambled out of bed, and Shin projected a display for me.
I almost had a heart attack. The alien fleet was huge. What the hell was I going to do?
Our base was ostensibly designed to protect nearby mining projects, but I'd always figured any raiders could attack the mining operations without disturbing us.
They ignored my warning about the Spear of God, Shin said.
If you're old enough to remember President Kimura, then you probably recall the footage of him standing on top of a Spear of God, or BFM as they were popularly known.
These missiles are so big they'll destroy all trace of our enemies, Kimura proclaimed.
He made a big deal about promising to install a BFM at every company base, but I had my doubts about the wisdom of a defense policy that relied on a single missile.
The enemy is oncoming, Shin said. Please confirm Spear of God launch.
What are you talking about? You know that won't work. Although our base was equipped with a BFM, due to budget restrictions, the launch tubes hadn't been upgraded. The BFM was too big to fire. If you're wondering how this kind of situation could ever arise, then obviously you haven't had much to do with military contracting firms.
Please confirm Spear of God launch, Shin repeated.
I am not going to get out and push. The missile won't fire. For security reasons, you weren't informed that the launch tubes were upgraded. Please confirm Spear of God launch.
I checked the launch tubes 2 days earlier as part of my regular inspection.
Is this a drill?
This is not a drill.
What the hell? Fire away.
Confirmed.
A small red dot appeared on the display and streaked towards the alien fleet. The dot was so small and the fleet so vast. At best, it was just going to annoy them. If the missile failed to stop the invaders, company policy directed me to crash my shuttle into their flagship. There was no way I was going to kamikaze for my corporate overlords. Ain't no divine wind in space.
The dot reached the fleet. The dot and the entire fleet vanished from the display.
What happened?
Alien fleet has been destroyed. Please confirm end of hostilities.
What? The BFM can't have destroyed the entire fleet.
The missile destroyed all trace of our enemies, Shin said.
Took me a moment to work out what was going on. I am not a morning person. A base that had survived an alien invasion would be viewed as more important. That meant an increased budget. That meant more bandwidth. The company wouldn't believe that an AI would fake an alien invasion, but who knew what all of those unauthorized upgrades had done to Shin's programming?
End of hostilities confirmed, I replied.
There was an investigation, of course, but the president had promised the missile would leave no trace of our enemies. The company man they sent wasn't fooled, but he knew that if he made a fuss about it, then it would come out that they hadn't given us enough money to upgrade the launch tubes, and no one wants that kind of attention. Everyone loves reading about a hero, so that's what they called me. The man who saved the galaxy from invasion. Shin got his upgrades, and I got to do PR for the company. And that is the completely true story of how I saved the galaxy on a limited budget. It's your turn to buy the next round.
I'm Joanna LaForgia, and I'll be reading I Let You Go by H.L. Fullerton. And the first word in this title is spelled E-Y-E-L-E-T. I Let You Go by H.L. Fullerton. Share the funnest item of clothing you've worn. At the party, someone, I forget who, we were all wasted by then, asked, "What's the funniest item of clothing you've ever worn?" It wasn't quite the non sequitur it sounded. Gerda had decorated her place with those cheesy conversation starter napkins. You know what I'm talking about.
The ones with screwball questions or ubiquitous dares scrawled across them. The kind that don't actually pick up a spilled cocktail, but dissolve into doughy clumps that leave colored smudges on your hands and clothes. Those. She'd squealed when she saw them in the party store. Did the same dance my dog does when he has to go outside. She grabbed my arm and said, "We need these for Friday. They're like so lean. They're ironic. Don't you think?" "I think you don't know what ironic means," I said. "Don't be like that, Chantel." Later, she told me she meant kitschy. I pretended not to know what she was talking about. I'm like that sometimes. Which was why I was also pretty sure the napkin read, "Funnest clothing item." Though it should have been "most fun" if one wanted to go all grammar-like, and not "funniest." But what is? Drunk people, am I right? Fun, funniest. An eyelet lace baseball cap. Everyone laughed, trying to imagine me wearing something like that. Truth? I didn't even remember having it until the question was asked. Then the photo my mom took of my sister and I wearing them, standing in front of the garage of all things, flashed in my head. My sister wore hers bill front. I wore mine backwards, gangster style. The back had a round hole puckered by a wide, wide ribbon tied into a tight bow so someone could fuck with your head. I got mad thinking about them. Wished I could remember who'd sent them. Ask a WTF she was thinking, sending lace baseball caps to little league playing 8-year-olds. Tell her that photo was the only time we ever wore them. Tell her we didn't need your judgy, patriarchaic, gender-conforming nonsense. Sweet is for suckers. Would you get on an alien spaceship? I was the only no. "Why wouldn't you go?" everyone said. "You'd pass on an alien joyride?" First off, how would I know the aliens were issuing an invitation? "You think aliens speak English?" I said. "Besides, you don't know where they'd take you or if they'd even bring you back. Maybe they're on a hunting trip and you're the catch of the day." "You're taking the question too seriously," Gertie said. "It's asking whether you're open to adventure." She crawled on her hands and knees towards me. "Adventure if... say yes to the aliens, Chantel." I think the real problem was no one else took the question seriously enough. These friends of Gertie's would take candy from a serial killer if he had a cool enough ride. Refusing to see the danger doesn't mean it's not there. But I let it slide. There was a party. Gertie wanted all her friends to like me. Be fun, adventuresome. Fine, I'd let aliens take the whole lot of them for a spin. Except for Gertie. The bug bots can't have her, too. Name your favorite device. Gertie said her phone. Said she'd die without it. Told the story about the time she and Alvin broke up because she left it in an airport bathroom and caught the next flight home rather than stay in Cancun without it. Alvin picked a sex toy, told Gertie he'd share if she wanted. Gertie laughed and told her ex he could keep his. She wasn't sharing her phone with anyone. I said, "Pride bar." There was a lot of eye-rolling and "don't be such a tool" guffaws. A pry bar isn't something to make fun of. I could dismantle the world with a large enough one. Take it apart piece by piece. Then burn the lace baseball cap bits. You know what else is a device? A ray gun. Bet your joy-riding adventurous aliens won't be caught dead without 'em. Confess a bad habit. My sister and I never stopped letting people fuck with our heads and accepting it like the whole world is some funky, ironic photo shoot. Our mom should have taught us to say no thanks. Showed us how to decline gifts we didn't want instead of keeping them just because some jerk scrawled our names across it. Dear aliens, no, I would not like a ride in your unidentified flying object, but it was very kind of you to ask. Please have this special hat as a token of my appreciation. The hole goes in back. Smiles, Chantel. P.S. Gertie also sends her regrets. Worst thing that ever happened to me is happening now. Trust me to pick the lamest napkin. I crumbled it into a ball and threw it at Gertie. She uncrumpled it, read it, and tossed it back at me, eyes at full plead. Your turn, Chantel, she said. If I read the napkin I picked, Gertie would lie. She wouldn't say Alvin. I wouldn't say aliens. No one would tell the truth, and it'd be like we were all capping our memories in eyelet lace to pretty 'em up. Pretty is for parrots. I made up my own conversation starter. If you could be anywhere you wanted, where would you be? Alvin said Cancun. Stella wanted In-N-Out Burger. Gertie said she'd stay right here. And everyone hug-tackled her for being so sweet. Me, I'd be back in front of that garage, sporting an eyelet cap, mugging it up with my sister. I'd stop her from smiling, tell her a hard stare and a good frown might be all that stands between you and peril. That just because someone asks doesn't mean you have to say yes. Adventure is the promise of all captors. But out loud, for Gertie, for her guests, I said, the bathroom, and crawled down the hall to piss. Alvin cornered me before I could. You know what your problem is, Chantel? Finally, a question worth answering. Yeah, I wanted to say. My sister got on that stupid alien ship, and they never brought her back. And you idiots would jump on it just like her without a second thought. Worse, you want to take Gertie with you, and I still have stupid matching lace baseball caps hanging in my closet, and people like you who want me to wear 'em. But the answer I gave Alvin was, you're in my way. From the look on his face, he knew I was right. I crawled past him thinking, don't roll over. Be the lever, not the wheel. The worst thing that ever happened to me is happening now. In the bathroom's oval mirror, flashing colored lights gave me a flickering halo, like I'd lost a circuit or two. When the walls rumbled so hard plaster cracked, I knew it was neither police car nor ambulance arriving. From the living room came muffled cries of surprise and shouts of, awesome, cool. I froze. Pictured Gertie and Alvin and all the rest piling outside, not yet sober enough to recognize danger when it flashed in front of them. Say no to the aliens, I screamed. Say no, Gertie. I yanked open the bathroom door and ran down the hall of Gertie's empty apartment, thinking a pry bar would be a handy device right about now. Better than selfie-taking phones, whose flashes I could see through the front windows lighting up the courtyard. I hurried to stop Gertie from sweetly saying yes to an adventure. Outside, the UFO was already lifting off, its colored lights gone dark. My foot caught on something and plastic skidded across the pavement. The ground was littered with phones. I fell to my knees, searching for Gertie's amongst them, wondering what her final image would look like, how long this new photo would haunt me. If you were in a rap battle, whose words would win?
Hey, Chantel, you made it to the after party.
That was Gertie's voice. I looked up, and there she was. I could barely believe it. You didn't go? I thought you wanted to be adventurous. She held up her favorite device.
They wouldn't let me take my phone. Ironic, right?
Sure, I said, even though she was still misusing the word. Totes ironic. And, Gertie said, as she helped me find my feet, can you imagine what would happen to you if I wasn't around? Face it, Chantel. You totes need a keeper. Luckily, you got me. And that's the end of our story, listeners. And there's a brief author story note here. The author, H.L. Fullerton, says, ever wonder about napkins that don't napkin properly, or what the niche market for lace baseball caps is, or how gifts can be burdens, and when politeness might cause harm, or why friendships work between seemingly disparate personalities? I do. And then I add aliens and write a story about it.
I am Gerald Rubin, and I am reading There Are No Eaters of Souls in America by Rebecca Framwell. The monster slithered over the side of the ship when nobody else was looking. Hodel could have cried out, but she was more afraid of the other passengers than she was of the monster. It shivered and dripped water onto the deck from tattered seaweed fronds. It looked like an old peddler, stuffed with rags to keep warm. It looked like it might speak Yiddish. You shouldn't be here, said Hodel. You've got no ticket, and you might be sick. I am sick, said the monster. It did speak Yiddish, badly, with a sloshy, abyssal accent. I've been eating the ones they tip over, it said. The ones who don't make it. Ah! That's a mistake. Their dreams are so strong. They're making me ill. I've got to finish it, or I'll have no peace. Hodel tried to remember what her mother had done for the old peddlers. Are you hungry? She asked. Not yet, said the monster. My stomach can't take any more dreams just now. If they find you, said Hodel, I don't think they'll let you stay. If you're sick, you could be contagious. The people in charge of the boat had been very clear, but she didn't want the monster to leave. Everyone else spoke German. I'll hide you, she said. They don't have to know. The monster wobbled in jellyfish agreement. It seemed quite helpless. Hodel draped her shawl over it to hide the fronds of its face. She felt warm and grown up. Helping the sick was a mitzvah. Her mother would have been proud.
I'm Emily Chiola, and I will be reading Rage by Billy Higgins. Blood, sweat, exhaustion. I hate when he sees me like this. "You're home," he says. He always looks different through the eye holes in my mask, less like a person, more like a shadow. "It's 3 a.m., I say. "Yeah." "Why are you up?" "I was watching you on the news. You were good." He's sitting on the couch, holding a steaming cup of coffee. This feels wrong. Him so casual, me in costume. I walk over to him, but black leather constricts my movement, making me go slower. My gloves and shoulders are spiked, suggesting I don't want to be touched. Problem is, I do. "I want you to know that I'm proud of you," he says. "You saved the city, and that's something to be proud of." I almost thank him, but the tone of his voice is wrong. I stand there, rubbing his shoulders, watching over him. I try working through the knots, but he won't relax. I hadn't noticed the specks of blood on my gloves until just now. "I'm telling you that because I don't want you to think I don't love you. I don't want you to think I can't see how much good you're doing." I take my hands off his shoulders. "Is this about the fight we had this morning?" "Yes," he says, hand shaking as he sets down his cup. "And no." "You two are just talking. I shouldn't have..." "I saw you on the news," he says, getting off the couch, turning to confront me. "You were smiling. It wasn't big. I'm sure no one else noticed. But I know you. I know you enjoyed beating up Dark Angel." "He was going to..." "I'm glad you did it. I'm talking about the fact that you enjoyed it." There's something in his eyes, an emotion I can't quite place. Lies won't work, so I tell the truth. "You're right. I like what I do." "Why?" His voice is soft. He already knows the answer. "It helps me to... It's an outlet. Helps me with my anger." "And what happens if you don't have that outlet?" he asks. "I'll always have it." My voice trembles. "Even when you're 50? He asks. "Even if you're outlawed or injured?" "I'll always have the mask." "I hope that's not true," he says, shaking his head. "God, I hope you can learn to let go." "I don't need to. I do good work." "But one day you'll get too old for it." His eyes look hollow. "When you punch a bad guy, do you ever see me?" "No," I say. "I would never..." "That's the outlet for your anger. Don't you ever get angry at me?" I don't know what to say. "I'm leaving," he says. "I'm sorry. I love you, and you do a lot of good in this world, but I have to go." "No!" I realize I'm yelling. I realize he's afraid.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Sci-Fi. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kurt Benrud, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sci-Fi is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.